Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm going to have this fantastic show today. We're going to talk about ribbons, we're going to talk about designing, and we're going to talk a lot about antique quilts. So, you know, it's really fun for me to meet a designer who's taking one product and putting it into quilts that, you know, a lot of quilters aren't doing. And I thought it'd be really fabulous to have designer and author Elaine Schmidt come on and talk to us about ribbons. She loves ribbons. She's authored a book on ribbon crafts, and she puts them in her quilts. And she has got lots and lots of tips and secrets that she's going to share with us today. Hi, Elaine. How are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm great. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Oh, this is so exciting because quilters are so tactile. You know, I mean, we love things, you know, anything with design and color and fiberish, you know. So I think a lot of us already own ribbon, and, you know, that will be a lot of fun to know what to do with it.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of things you can do with it. A little bit more maybe than you might think of in terms of just sewing it onto something.
I was going to say, Elaine, first tell me, you work in both the quilt and the craft industry.
That's right. I've worked in the quilt and the craft industry for quite a while, working for different manufacturers, working with their products, developing new products, writing projects, and I've really done a lot of work, especially in the fabric and the ribbon area.
And your book is called The Complete Photo Guide to Ribbon Crafts, and it is absolutely amazing.
Thanks so much. Well, ribbons have always been a love for me. In fact, I'm just a big textile person. I started out majoring in college in textiles and went on to work with Vogue and Butterick Patterns, and just have always been able to find jobs that allow me to take my passion and use it for profit and fun.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the fun part's good. It's always good when you like your job that much, you know.
Yes.
It's fun to go to work.
Makes it easier, sure.
Yeah. So what can quilters do with ribbon? Let's talk a little bit about what they can do, and then maybe talk a little bit about durability and things like that afterwards. So what are you doing with ribbons and quilts?
Okay, well, I mean, the easiest thing to do is to stitch a ribbon onto a project, say the edge of a skirt or maybe the front of a bag. You know, just sort of put it on there. It looks great. There's so many incredibly beautiful ribbons out right now that they really can do a nice accent to a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And another obvious thing is to use it as a belt, to get a belt buckle and make a belt with a piece of ribbon. Some things that I've been doing a little bit beyond that, I know making handbags right now, tote bags, very popular. I love using ribbon for the handles. I'll take two pieces of ribbon, I'll put them back to back, fuse them together, stitch them along the edges, and I've got my handle for my bag. So I'm not stitching and turning. It's dirty, it's fast, looks great, and then I incorporate some of the ribbon onto the front or back of the bag.
Now, Elaine, I have a question with that, because ribbons come in different weights. So if you're doing something that needs to be more durable, like a handle on a bag, do you have to put something behind it, or are there just some ribbons that are durable enough?
That's a good point. There are some ribbons that are woven and they're fairly thick. So when you put two of them together, you fuse them together, I find that they have plenty of body. If I have a ribbon that's a little softer and I still want to use it, I'll fuse it and stitch it to maybe a piece of webbing, just a solid color that'll showcase that ribbon, and that'll give it the extra oomph it might need. So really, almost any weight can be used, but if it's thick enough and you can use two pieces back to back and fuse it and sew it together, you really don't need anything else.
That makes a lot of sense to me, because ribbon is does have a lot of different thicknesses.
Right. Satin ribbons are very soft. That's not the type I would normally use for a bag handle. Mm-hmm. But the jacquard woven ribbons, which are a little thicker, have a lot of threads woven into them, are very sturdy and work up well for both a belt and as well a handle.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've done some things recently, and you've actually got them on your blog, too, at elaineschmidt.wordpress.com, about using the ribbons to create kind of a log cabin. And most quilters know what a log cabin looks like.
Right, right. I call this my lazy log cabin because I'm lazy and I don't have to do any cutting or piecing of fabric. I'm taking lengths of ribbon, and I'm fusing them down to a base fabric. So I'll start with my one that I really like or has a pretty design right in the middle, and I'll put a strip down. I'll fuse it down to my fabric. And then I'll take strips, cut, and fuse them down around that center area so that it becomes, again, that log cabin shape as I continue to put rows round and round
right.
That center square.
And then how are you sewing these exactly? I mean, do you need a walking foot because the ribbons might be thick? Are you sewing like with a zigzag, a decorative, just a straight stitch?
Well, you know, you do have a couple options. When I'm doing my lazy log cabin, and the ribbons, if you can envision this, are abutted next to each other. So they're side by side.
Mm-hmm.
So on a piece like that, I want to choose a stitch that will zigzag or overcast or decoratively stitch them together. So in that case, I'll pick one of those stitches to do. If I'm stitching a ribbon just down flat onto a particular project, or say the border of a quilt, I might want to put a long length of ribbon on the border. I can use a straight stitch, and I do use my walking foot for that.
Ah, yeah, because I was just thinking for a thicker piece that you might need that even feed foot to pull it through.
Comes in handy. There's a couple other things I do, kind of little tips to handle ribbon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When I'm sewing the sides together, I always work from the same direction. So if I've got a decorative stitch going and I'm working, say, on what is the right side of my ribbon, then I will go and stitch from the left side down in the same direction. And that just keeps any distortion from happening.
Oh, that's a good tip. That's a really good one.
The other thing, I hate pins. I just don't like the pin. So I'll take a little basting glue or strips of fusible web, and I'll position my ribbon onto whatever it is I want to sew it to, and use that to hold it in place without pins. And again, that frees it up so that I don't have to stop and start and remove them. Gives me a nice even feed as I stitch along the sides.
And I'll bet that that's really helpful for the thicker ribbons because it distorts when you have to pin them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know they're there where I want them to be, and I just bring them to the machine and go.
Now, this is what a lot of quilters will want to know, and I want to know too. And when I told some people the other day that you were going to come out and talk about ribbon, this is the first question they asked me. We all want to know, how does this wash? You know, if you're going to put it on a project that you're going to wash, what do we need to know?
You do need to know that. You need to check and see what the ribbon is made out of. I work with Renaissance ribbons a lot. They are woven ribbons. They are all polyester. They do not shrink.
Mm-hmm.
I press them with a light steam pressing, but I don't pre-wash them when I'm working on a project. However, anything I put them on, especially a cotton quilting fabric, if I'm going to wash that project, I make sure to pre-wash my fabric because that will shrink, and that will cause the puckering. But I don't find that the ribbon itself shrinks. I've done a little testing where I've measured it, and I've washed it, and it's the same measurement.
And they don't run? They don't, bleed the dye out of the ribbons at all or get funky?
Well, good quality ribbons won't. But it's always good to test. You can you can pre-wash them for sure. And then you can blot them on, say, a white paper towel or something to see if there's any excess dye. But I haven't found that, especially with Renaissance ribbon, to be a problem at all.
Oh, that's fabulous to know. Yeah, because I think it's just we don't always wash all our quilts, you know, Elaine, you know that. But,
yeah, right.
but we want to know if we did want to wash them, you know.
Well, of course. And I think if I was, say, choosing an antique ribbon, I have some ribbons I've picked up in antique shops or flea markets, then you don't know exactly what you're working with. So that would be a good idea to at least do a test and treat it as you might want to treat your finished piece. If it's, again, if it's going to be a wall piece, You're never sure about fading with antique pieces. So it's something to be concerned about when you don't know the exact fiber content of the ribbons.
Yeah. And is there any fraying? You know, are most ribbons, do they have like a firm enough edge then that they don't fray? It's only where you've cut them on the crossway?
Yes. Well, the way ribbons are woven, they're like little tapestries in the sense that there's a salvage on each of the long edges.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when you do cut them, they're woven ribbons, they will fray at the cut edge.
Right,
so,
okay.
So there's a couple ways of handling that. First of all, sometimes they can be hidden in a seam, and if you are careful as you handle them, you can just cut them, place them on your project, sew it together, and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. However, if you're going to handle them at all, it's a good idea perhaps to zigzag the end with your machine,
mm-hmm.
or you can put a fine line of nail polish or a clear glue or a sealant like fray check. And that will keep it from fraying while you handle it. And then there's a third way if you would like to heat set the ends, because polyester will melt and seal. Mm-hmm. You can... This is a little tricky. I don't really love this method, but you can run the end of it quickly through a candle flame.
Mm-hmm.
It works. I've done it. It's not my favorite thing to have a lit candle in my sewing room.
Right.
But there are textile tools that have a cutter that heats up on the end, mm-hmm. and those work great for both cutting and sealing at the same time.
Oh, neat. I didn't know about that. That's kind of cool.
I think it's a textile tool and it has many different applications, but one of them is a cutter. It's kind of like a wood-burning tool.
Right. Oh.
And then there's also a new tool that's just come out that uses a wire that gets hot. So when you put that into this little, I think it's the iMagic Cut tool, it heats up and the hot wire will cut and seal the ribbon.
Wow. But with a lot of things that quilters might be doing, they would go into the seams, so...
Yeah.
So
but again, if
really
you're going to handle it, if you're going to handle it very much, it's a good idea to at least zigzag it a little bit, you know, if mm-hmm. you're going to be tossing things around a little bit, so...
Well, Elaine, this has been absolutely fabulous. I've learned so much about ribbons. I can't wait to try it.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you.
So I would like everybody to visit you at Elaine Schmidt, schmidt.com for her website and find all her cool things and check out her book called Ribbon Crafts. Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you so much, Pat.
We'll be right back after this break.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, hello, Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Get Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have got designer, fabric designer, pattern designer, Shari Butler with me. And she does the most adorable fabrics and is so creative. I just couldn't wait to get her on the show to chat to us about how, what her process is, how she goes about creating all of her lovely things. So, hi, Shari. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Pat? How are you?
I am doing wonderful. I bet you've been out just sewing all summer long, haven't you? Drawing and sewing.
I have been. I've been designing, doing a little bit of sewing, but mostly designing right now. So
that's good. That's right. We like when you have lots of time to do that. Tell me a little bit about your background. How did you fall in love with sewing and quilting and designing fabric?
Well, my mother and my grandmother always, both my grandmothers have always been into sewing and fabric, but like in school when I was younger, I wasn't really into it. It's when I actually got married, when I started to want to learn how to sew and actually do the quilting, and that's where I started making like little baby blankets, you know, for friends and family, and that's where I started getting into it, and I just fell in love with the fabric. I've always been in love with fabric and the textile of it. I just feel like it doesn't limit you in what you can do when designs are on paper. I feel it limits you just a little bit more.
Right. You know, fabric, I think, is what draws a lot of this. Don't you think that all your friends that sew, it's like it's really about the fabric?
It is. It's all about the fabric. And I love looking at vintage fabric, and I love the feel of it. Like, my grandma has beautiful quilts and my mom has beautiful quilts, and just feeling that and seeing the years being passed down, I feel like it's a sweet moment for the hard work that they create. I think that's where we get our love for it, is passing it on generation to generation.
That's awesome. You've got quilts in your family. That's really great.
We do. My mom has them.
Yeah, your mom has them. Okay, she lets you visit them. Is that it, Shari?
We get to visit them, but she's made me a few quilts too, and I really love it. So yeah. it's fun to have those handmade quilts.
So you decided at some point that it might be fun to have a fabric line. You know, how did that happen? Did you just say, you know, I have these little sketches, or have you always been an artist and been drawing things and you just, you know, send an idea in?
Well, I've always been doing drawings and illustrations, but my story is a little bit different. I actually went to Christian Wholesale, which is also Riley Blake, and I went in to go buy some fabric to actually make baby blankets to sell on Etsy. And when I saw that they had my mind's eye as an artist, I'm like, well, I am an artist as well. And they were looking for more artists, and probably 2 days later, I went down, met with them, presented a few lines, and then 2 weeks later, I had a fabric line out going to fall market.
Oh, my gosh. That's like a Cinderella story. I got goosebumps.
So it's a different story. That, I mean, most people go to quilt market to shop their designs, and I kind of had a different entry into the fabric world. I've always been inspired by, like, Sandy Henderson and Heather Bailey. I loved their fabrics when I went to the quilt shops, and that's what I wanted to do. And I just didn't know how to go about it until I met with Riley Blake.
Neat. Oh, and then you have a kind of a unique company name. Your company name is Doohickey Designs. Where does that come from?
Well, I had to come quickly with a name for my artist. And, you know, there's Amy Butler out there, and I adore her designs. But I did, you know, I had, my married name is Butler. And so I was talking to my sister. I'm like, I want to be a little bit more unique, and that's just not my name. And so we were came up with a few things, and it's my brother-in-law that came up with Doohickey Designs, because you always have to find something, right, that doodad, whatever, and that's how I came up with it. So it just stuck.
That's great. I love that story.
So my brother-in-law is the one to thank for that one.
Oh my gosh, I bet he's proud of himself.
He is. He's pretty proud. They love that. I have to give them credit for the name.
So when you get ready to do a design, you know, what does Shari go through? You know, what happens with you? Do you have mood boards? Do you do, you know, look at antique things? You know, how do you develop an idea?
Well, I have a unique process and every line is different, but I always have a little notebook that I jot down ideas and I always keep that and I will, you know, write down bubbles and little things, how I want a theme to come into a fabric line. Mm-hmm. My fabric lines are always kind of themed, as you've noticed, as we've gone along. And I already have like a novelty print. And so I will write down some ideas, but then I also draw in there some ideas of what I want to do. And I always draw my elements first before I actually put them into a repeat. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I always draw out my elements and I make sure that that's what the line's going to carry into. I do love to go shop at antique stores, and I love vintage. Right now, I have a thing for Pyrex. Mm. I haven't bought any yet, but I want to. But I'm totally into that, or antique phones. I love looking at those. So it just, and Pinterest is a great way, but when I'm doing a fabric line, I try to stay away from Pinterest because I want my lines to be unique to my own.
Right. So it is hard, isn't it, when you're looking at lots and lots of things?
Yes, it is. So I always try to avoid Pinterest when I'm actually right in the middle of developing a fabric line. Mm-hmm. And then after, I'll go in and I'll look at Pinterest, and I adore Pinterest for that because it's great inspiration, but I don't want to limit myself when I'm doing my own lines. So I always avoid that, mm-hmm. and I sometimes will get in my own little creative groove, and when my husband's gone, I will just start drawing everything out, and usually a line will come within a couple of days to me that I'll have it laid out, and then it's a process. You've been there, you know. Mm-hmm. Fabric lines are a process to get there, and you just want to make sure it's the right one for you. So inspiration comes anytime for me. Right. That's why I always have a little notebook to draw,
yeah, that's
or
great.
Write things down.
Yeah, and so did you always sketch and draw? You said you always were like a doodler.
I am. I grew up doodling. My mom always had papers and paints and markers and crayons for me to do, and she sometimes would give me assignments, here, go draw the mountains. Mm-hmm. I think just to get out of her hair, but mm-hmm. she's the one that got me to do. She always has been into arts and crafts.
So I have to
thank my mom and my sister for showing me the way in that because they've always been in the arts and crafts.
Neat. And now tell me your current line that's in the stores.
That is Dress Up Days.
Okay.
And it was inspired by Ramona books. I've always been in love with Ramona books since I was a little girl. Mm-hmm. So it's my own little Ramona that I had in my head. And she's kind of tomboyish and mm-hmm. sweet at the same time. And the fabric lines are in three different categories. You've got the spring, the summer, and the fall.
Ah.
So that's how I kind of split up. Like the purple is the spring, mm-hmm. the navies and blues are in the summer, and then the orange is in the fall. So it was just kind of a sweet line that I wanted to tell my own version story of Ramona. And the panel is inspired. Gina and I came up with that idea together. Mm-hmm. Gina is the design director for Red Lake. Mm-hmm. We came up with that together to create a moment with a mother, a grandmother, an aunt, you know, or even an uncle if they want to teach their nephew, son or daughter how to sew their own little doll.
I love that. You know, that's a neat story because your fabric, you're just taking and putting like a whole little story into all the pieces that go into your fabric line.
I am.
Nice. Well, and then your next line is called Life in the Jungle. That's not out yet, but that's the next one.
That is out in January. And Life in the Jungle is Hitty Hoot Kangaroo is my second line. Mm-hmm. And Life in the Jungle is kind of my Hitty Hoot Kangaroo. Mm-hmm. It's all about the animals, and it's all boy. And in there, we have a panel that is actually an alphabet book. So it's all about the jungle. So ants are in the jungle. I think I have a certain kind of bats are in there. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of fun to bring all the little elements for a little boy's room.
And the books are great. People can sew those up. And even if they didn't sew it, they could use the panels in quilt blocks.
They can. In fact, I'm working on some patterns for that, that they can actually be in just quilt blocks or little quick, easy, quiet books that mm-hmm. they can hurry, turn inside out, and sew online. And they have a book all that they can read to their child.
And then you also create some patterns to go along with your fabric, right?
I do. Right now I'm focusing on quilting and embroidery, mm-hmm. and that's what we're focusing on right now. I did have one for Dress Up Dave, and it was all about the granny quilts. So mm-hmm. I love the granny quilt squares. That was huge this summer, a lot on Pinterest, mm-hmm. and I wanted to pair that up with some embroidery for the 4th of July.
Ah, and what when you do embroidery, do you use a hoop? I'm always curious whether people hoop or not when they embroider.
I have to use a hoop.
Yeah.
I think I'm old school. Yeah. My mom taught us how to use a hoop. Like when we went on long vacations, mm-hmm. she would give my brother and I a sewing project, I think, to keep us quiet. And we always had the hoop. And then she put batting behind it as well. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm leaning more towards just that stabilizer. I can't remember what the name is mm-hmm. of it.
Like an interfacing kind of piece.
Yeah, and I'm using that more. Cinderberry's, she stitches, has a book out, and I liked how she uses that for her embroidery. I think it gives it more of a sleek look, and that's what I use on my quilts.
Well, Shari, this has been a lot of fun to get to know you a little better for me and for everybody else and to hear how you work.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah, so everybody should go and visit Shari at DoohickeyDesignStudio.com. Check out her fabrics and her patterns. Thanks.
Hey, thank you so much.
We'll be right back after this break, and we're going to talk a little bit of antique quilting.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Welcome back to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. And what a show it is! Strutting down the runway with a fizzle and pop is Pezzi Print by American Jane. Now it's Kate Spain, showcasing waterfalls of color and good fortune. Chloe's Closet is here with a peachy keen idea, combining two classic favorites, flannel and 30s prints. Next, let's take a walk in the woods with Anil Ahoy and discover enchanting storybook characters. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines. Go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and now I get to talk for the rest of the show about antique quilts, and I'm so excited. You all know that I love, love, love antique quilts. And this afternoon, for the next half an hour, we are going to chat with Roderick Kirikoff. And Roderick is an author. He is a, antique dealer, a curator, and you probably, if you've been quilting any amount of time, and you should have the book, The American Quilt, A History of Cloth and Comfort. This is like a classic, classic book that tells you all kinds of amazing things about quilting, and Roderick is the guy that put this together. So I'm really excited to have him come on and tell us a little bit about his life in the world of quilting. Hi, Roderick.
Hi, Pat. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Oh, you're my idol. You.
Really?
I'm so excited.
Well, thank you.
So
you know how to win a guy's heart.
Yeah. Well, it's just so true. I mean, I think I bought that particular book, The American Quilt, very soon after I started, because I have a deep love of the antique quilts, because I think that quilters, I just relate to people who quilted then. You know, I always think they didn't all make quilts just to keep warm. They did it for fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was definitely a creative outlet. And, you know, one of the few that women had, way more quilts were made than there were beds to have them put on. So they were making them for definitely because they loved to do it. It was that creative outlet.
So how did you personally decide to, you know, collect quilts and be involved in the history of quilts? What made you have that interest?
Well, it goes back to a love of history. When I was in school, grade school, junior high, high school, college, I love history. I love the times in the past. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I started going to estate sales and farm auctions in northern Indiana, where I grew up, because I loved the objects that people had. You know, I grew up in the 50s. I wasn't real excited about the things that were being made in the 50s, which, of course, are so in now, mid-century.
Right.
But I love those early objects. The interesting thing is, you know, this was in the 1960s, and I never saw a quilt in Indiana. It wasn't until I moved to Los Angeles in 1973 that a girlfriend at the time had a quilt made by an aunt in Wisconsin. It was a 1930s butterfly applique quilt, pastel. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I had a grandmother that sewed, so I grew up seeing, you know, her mend and make things and sew. It wasn't until I got into the business that she pulled a box off the closet shelf and said, well, she said, I think you might be interested in this. And she pulls out this incredible log cabin, made out of prints. Most of them were flower stack and other, you know, dress prints from the 30s and the 40s. My mother would look at it and recognize her dresses, her sister's dresses, her mother's dresses and house coat, her grandmother's apron, all things like this. Mm. But I never saw that until I had actually started in the business.
That's really amazing, because you think, you know, this has been in the house and they just, you know, think, oh, well, you know, we just own this. Never thought to show you till way later.
Well, I think it's also certain families put away the special things in the cedar chest, you know, in the top of the closet to use for, quote, a special occasion. And generally that meant never.
Right.
So just so many. And on some level, thank goodness for that. I think a lot of the quilts that, you know, came out and were purchased, found by dealers and purchased by collectors, a lot of those were saved because families thought, well, these are special. It's always interesting how they left the family. But you asked me how I started the business. I met Michael Kyle. I met Michael Kyle in Yellow Springs, Ohio, 1976. And I was trained as a social worker. I practiced as a social worker for a year, and I thought, I want to have more fun. And I said to him, let's start a quilt business, because we both had the interest in quilts. We were going to farm auctions. By then, quilts were out at auction. It was bicentennial time. They were a hot item. And we personally loved them, but, well, maybe we could make a go of this as a business. Made the conscious decision not to be a collector at the same time. I always felt whenever I bought from an antique quilt dealer who also collected, I thought, they've skimmed off the cream from the top. I'm seeing the next level down.
Right,
now, sometimes
right.
Later, when I saw their collections, I thought, oh, no, those don't interest me as much. But we just felt that we wanted collectors who started coming to us to know they were seeing everything that we bought. Nothing was being held back. So I didn't start collecting until I put together this recent collection that's featured in my new book called Quilts. So it was kind of a new experience for me to become a quilt collector after having worked with many, many, and, you know, just some of the best collections in the country. I had the privilege of helping to add to.
Tell me a few of those that people would, you know, really know about.
Well, the Esprit collection that Doug Tompkins started, that Julie Silver was the curator of. The Binney collection, Edwin Binney III and his daughter Gail Binney Winslow. They were a wonderful couple to be involved with and help form that collection. I then produced the book called Homage to Amanda, which was the title of a 3-year traveling exhibition of that collection. Robert and Artist James. We also started forming corporate collections. Bank of America started a collection of quilts because of us. Levi Strauss had begun to collect quilts as part of their art collection. We added incredible quilts to that collection. So corporations, the corporate art buyers, again, in the late 70s and early 80s, when corporations were putting a lot of money into art, we had the privilege of meeting some really wonderful curators and their buyers who really understood the quilt. They personally loved them. They saw what, you know, they looked at them as art, but they knew when they hung them in corporate settings that people would relate to them on so many levels. So many people would come and say, you know, I make quilts too. I'm so glad that you're honoring these and hanging them in my workplace.
Oh, neat.
And then, you know, people also looked at them as the visual, stunning beauty and works of art that many of them are and were.
Do you have one of your exhibits that you were involved maybe in helping put together that sort of stands out, like what makes it stand out for you? Because you've been able to see so many different things that the average person hasn't.
I know. I really am very fortunate to have seen the number of quilts I've seen, have access to museum collections and private collections. In terms of exhibitions that I have curated, I did a wonderful collection, a doll quilt and dolls and doll furniture that unfortunately, well, I mean, it happened in Japan. It happened in Tokyo for Seibu, one of the Seibu department stores. I wish that I could have brought it to the U.S. and done it there, because they did just a stunning display. They took a lot of my ideas and just executed them beautifully.
Is it hard to find? I'm just, you know, this is sort of a tangent question here, but doll quilts were often used. You know, they're given to children and used is what I'm assuming. Is it hard to find doll quilts that are still intact?
They are. A wonderful dealer and collector named Gloria List had put together, like in the late 60s, early 70s, an incredible collection of doll quilts that I believe was shown in New York, or at least a lot of them were published, but we purchased that collection from her, and then we found doll quilts on our own. Mm-hmm. One always has to be careful that they're not cut down from
an older quilt. I was just going to ask you that.
you have to look carefully at how the construction of them and get a sense of are they genuine or not. But you're right. Children used them, they were played with, and, you know, they were used up. But fortunately, there are a lot of wonderful doll quilts that still exist. There's a great collection at the International Quilt Study Center and Museum of the collection. I'm forgetting now who that collector that put those together, but those now are housed in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right. And, you know, and I was there, Rod, and when I went up to where they have the library.
Yeah.
I think they have taken some of those doll quilts and some of the other quilts in the collection. They have a small, like, reproduction display. So the doll quilts, they somebody made up, like, a sample of it, you know, reproduced it so that they could leave them out instead of keeping them, you know, all locked up all the time. So that was pretty cool to see.
Great.
So we're gonna talk about your book when we come back from the break, because I am, like, so excited about your new book. And then we're gonna talk a little bit about some of the stories and things that are going along with your book. Because what time period are the quilts in here?
1950 to the end of the 20th century.
Ass. So I've been dying to find out if anybody's collecting quilts from this time frame. This has been so, it's like the ones that, you know, everybody's from right now have been using. It's like polys and everything else in them. So this is going to be cool. We're going to take a little break.
Okay.
And then when we come back from the break, we're going to continue to talk to Roderick Kirikoff. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
We're back at the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. You can just feel the excitement. Minnick and Simpson are back with Prairie Paisley 2, a collection with the rich, layered look of a well-loved fabric stash. Here comes Sandy Gervais getting sassy with this bright and cheerful line. Up next, Deb Strain's Tend the Earth is bringing the peaceful feeling of a garden to the runway. Ooh la la, it's Bunny Hill Designs and Baby's Going to Paris. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases,
storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am talking to Roderick Kirikoff, who is an author, curator, collector of quilts. So, Roderick, when did you decide that you should collect from the 50s on?
It was 2004 when I first purchased a quilt. I literally kind of woke up one day and often my ideas come to me like that. That I really was curious about what were the quilts like from the 1950s. I mean, I was born in 1951. This is my era. Mm-hmm. And the American quilt ended at 1950. And I'd taken a break from kind of the quilt world. I felt like there wasn't, I didn't have much that I had to say right then, mm-hmm. but I really became curious about what were the quilts like. Were there, you know, good quilts out there from that time period? I certainly knew of the art quilt movement and the mm-hmm. quilts that were made through the quilt guilds and the quilt revival after the bicentennial, but I wanted to see what kind of quilts were being made, as I call them now, under the radar. A lot of this developed, you know, as this proceeded. But, and then I also was really curious about eBay. It mm-hmm. was such a phenomenon. And I knew people from the quilt days, quilt dealers that I knew, mm-hmm. Who were starting to use that medium. I learned of new people in the business, you know, mm-hmm. that were now doing this on the internet. Of course, I used to fly back to the East and the Midwest and buy quilts from dealers, you know, face-to-face. And now here's this new phenomenon where you're sitting at your computer and looking at quilts. I made a list, a criteria of, you know, what I wanted to look for because, as you know, I'm sure you've been on eBay.
Oh, yes. I have been. I'm one of the very, before eBay was even called eBay, I was on there. So I'm a techie.
There's just thousands and thousands. It's like going to the biggest flea market ever. So I thought, I need a few guidelines of what I'm going to look for. So, again, it's that 1950 to the end of the 20th century. I really was pursuing my interest, my secondary interest of quilt. The American quilt was much more focused on history. I've always loved the visual of the quilt and looking at them, you know, as art objects. So I wanted to find ones that really visually spoke to me, were strong, but also quirky. I wasn't looking for the typical quilt. I wanted things that showed some real personality and a quilt maker that wasn't afraid to go out of the box.
Right, right.
And I love printed fabric, so I decided I'm going to look at predominantly printed fabrics versus solid colors. Mm-hmm. And I also decided my preference was for pieced quilts versus applique.
Oh, okay. All right, because I noticed that too. The book doesn't have really any applique quilts in it. They're all...
Right. And there are some applique in the collection. As the collector, you can break your own rules, which is fun. But it was just amazing to me when I started making some purchases and they were mailed in and opened the box and I pinned them up on the wall of my studio. Mm-hmm. I was stunned at how good they were. You know, you never know when something comes in the box. Is it going to be how they described it? And you're looking mm-hmm. at these little pictures on eBay. But I trusted my eye enough. And what was coming in was just way better than I expected. And I thought, well, maybe I'm on to something here.
And now, these are made with, are some of these made with polys also, or, you know, and nylon fabric and all that, you know, stuff people make clothing with?
You know, initially it was, oh, I want printed cottons, and there's going to be, in this time period, there's going to be some cotton blends and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then again, I realized that, of course, in this time period, there's going to be polyester, and I didn't have the bias that a lot of, I know a lot of quilt makers, when I'm going out and showing quilts to groups, I said, well, now this one's made out of polyester. There's often a groan in the audience. But then you open it up, and the colors are so bright and vivid, and there's an ooh and an ah about them that...
They don't fade, do they, those polys? They don't.
They don't. And so, you know, starting the collection, I realized, well, now this is kind of a historical overview of the fabrics of the period, and that became important to include and to have. But again, they all fit the criteria that I've set out, and sometimes they're some of my favorite quilts in the collection.
Do you know any of the people who made them? Were you able to get any history on them, or did that not interest you as much since?
No, it definitely interested me. I always ask for information, and I was really shocked at that. I thought by now, with all of the state quilt search projects, nearly every state in the union has done a state quilt search project, and the emphasis on quilt history and just what I did with the American quilt, I thought, oh, well, people are always going to have this information. And they go, well, why do you want that?
Yeah.
I go, well, it's nice to have that history with the quilt.
Yeah.
And it was, I know I was met with a certain amount of suspicion, but this happened back in the 70s, too, that dealers were afraid you were trying to find out their sources. And I always said, you know, that's not my interest. I don't care. I just, if there's history known, I would like to have that. Mm-hmm. So I quickly realized that a lot of this was going to be anonymous. Mm-hmm. I also, people would sometimes give information. I always kept that information with it. But unless I can document it and make sure that indeed that really was made by this person, I don't believe in passing on information that, you know, hasn't been documented.
Right, right. Now, you told me you had also a little story about that a group in South Carolina that you talked to about these type of quilts, and when you talked to Miss Ella.
I didn't talk to them. Again, this is the wonders and of Facebook.
Oh.
through this wonderful group on Facebook called Quilts Vintage and Antique, I met a lot of people that I didn't know currently in the quilt world. And what I learned, it was through one of those members who goes to South Carolina and works with different quilting groups there, had downloaded the book Quilts from Blurb onto an iPad.
Oh, okay.
She took the iPad to the group and was showing them these quilts. And there was a woman named Miss Ella who really sat with the iPad going through it. You know, those, you leaf through it like a book.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so beautifully illuminated from behind. But, you know, she just was kind of enthralled with it. And when she went to talk to her, she said, I can't believe that people actually like these quilts. These are the kinds of quilts that I make. And that my daughter is embarrassed by my quilts.
Aww.
Which was just so touching to me.
Yeah.
To bring some acknowledgement to somebody that was making the quilt because this is how either she learned to make them and wanted to make them, but to have people think, oh, these aren't that good. Yeah, I'm embarrassed by them, or these aren't in the good quilts, to learn that, yes, there are indeed people like myself and many others out there in the world that love these quilts. They're so drawn to, you know, the life and the soul and the vibrancy.
Because a lot of these in here are ones that have, I would call like a lot of personality, because there are a lot of string quilts, a lot of use it up type of things. You have quilts with like extra little blocks in them, and they all have a great aesthetic, don't they?
They do.
So what do you find, like, when you were going through all these? I mean, what was sort of a connector thing or like an aha that came to you with collecting for this book of yours?
Well, I kept going back to the ones that were visually strong to me, that appealed to my eye. I knew it was going to be a very personal collection. I knew not everyone would relate to them. Mm-hmm. Some people might find them ugly, but it didn't matter to me. It was something, I feel blessed that I could do this and just collect. These are the ones that appeal to me. These are what I really love and excited about. So, and then the fun thing has been to put them out there in the world, showing them. I had the privilege of showing part of the collection at San Francisco Museum of Modern Art as part of their 75th anniversary celebration.
Oh, that's fabulous. I bet they look fabulous in the museum.
Yeah, they were projected on the wall, and then I basically had a quilt sharing day. Joe Cunningham was one of the quilt holders, which was great, and my partner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were a lot of people for this that weren't that familiar with quilts, had never seen them or seen them again in that kind of a setting. And people were applauding them. That was really exciting to see that. But when I take them to quilt guilds, I get a tremendous response from people seeing them. And then again, on Facebook, it's so fun to show them there and get the feedback from other collectors and quilt makers. Have seen some wonderful quilts that are out there. So my concern that people might not relate to them was
unfounded.
I realized,
yes, right.
I realized there's definitely a big, big audience and others who really love them.
This has been absolutely fabulous for me to have you on the show and talk about this, Roderick. I just love it. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Everybody should visit Roderick at Roderick-Kiracoff, KIRACOFE.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Remember,
we'll be back next week. I'm your host, Pat
Sloan.
For more
information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques,